welcome to Orphan Entertainment, the podcast dedicated to public domain media, and welcome to our 24th episode. I am Christopher, and with me is the reason this podcast has made it this far, Lydia.
Good evening, everyone.
Welcome. How about that? That is awesome. 24 episodes. I couldn't believe it. A year ago, I didn't even realize it was our anniversary. We didn't even have an episode.
I had an episode, but it was a different kind.
Yeah. I think I just put the War of the Worlds in the feed and said, oh, that's an October thing.
No, it's 2 years. That's pretty incredible.
It is, and it has gone fast. It doesn't feel like two years to me.
It doesn't. I was thinking that. Actually, I think I said that out loud to somebody yesterday. I can't believe it's been 2 years.
Yeah, and I count it. We've actually discussed 21 total films and or radio programs. I think we did one episode with like four radio programs. I think that's 20 films.
Wow.
In those 24 episodes. So even more movies than I about that many.
Yeah.
But yeah, I went through the list and everything. And I started wondering if you had like a favorite of the films we reviewed, or maybe just the best time you remember discussing one of the films.
Oh man. Yeah. My favorites. you're going to see a theme. I did look back through that list as well of, all the movies we've looked at. Pretty consistently, my favorite ones are those classics, The Road to Bali, 39 Steps. I really enjoyed The Man in Gray. I'd never seen it before, but I think that's going to hit my favorites list up there. I think outside of that, I have to say Prisoners of the Lost Universe was probably one of my favorites. Just for being, kind of quirky like it was, I really enjoyed it. And I did go back and watch it again after we did the podcast. And and I still enjoyed it, even though, it's kind of one of those, it's like a movie that you watched a lot when you were a kid and you go back later and you watch it and it's not that great, but you still love it. And mm-hmm. I think I feel that way. It's kind of nostalgic, maybe.
Oh, absolutely. That is a fun. I haven't watched it since we discussed it, mm-hmm. but it is a fun one. It's one I still, it's one that whose scenes for whatever reason still occasionally pop into my head.
Right. Me too. I have that exact same. Well, a few specific ones. But, and maybe it's that kind of age old thing of you never forget your first. And,
right,
Doctor Who, your first doctor is always your doctor. And, your first podcast film is always that special one. So.
And that was pretty much, that was what I were like, okay, cool. This is going to work.
Yeah. We got, sat down to talk about a movie and actually managed to do it.
Yeah.
And, 2 years later, we're still doing it. So what about you? I'm curious what, if you came up with a favorite or some favorites.
I think the one that, it was a fun film, and I remember having a great time discussing it. It was one that you, Barry, and I discussed together. And you mentioned it, Road to Bali.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's just a tremendous amount of fun to watch, mm-hmm. and then to sit and discuss it and kind of relive it, as you're discussing it. It was so much fun, and I had such a great time talking, to you and Barry about it. So I think if I had to pick one as being just an episode of Orphan Entertainment that I love the most, that would probably be up there, but it may be tied with Prisoners of the Lost Universe.
Just
like you said, because it was the first, because as corny as the movie is, it's still enjoyable to watch.
It is.
Even more so, I'd probably going to go back and watch it again, probably listen to the episode again, then go back and watch it again.
Yeah. I should do it in that order as well.
Yeah. I think if we ever do like a commentary track, that should be the first one we do a commentary track for.
for Prisoners of the Lost Universe.
Absolutely.
Make it happen.
All right.
Thank you so, Christopher.
We will work on it. Well, okay then. I think what we are going to do now is take a short break, and when we come back, we will sink our teeth into 1980s Mama Dracula.
Hi, this is Kevin Batchelder. And this is the Saturday B Movie Reel.
Do something. Shoot it! Shoot it!
That's about describes it, yeah.
All right, everybody stay here.
We look specifically at the Sci-Fi Channel's original movies. You know the ones. The ones that air on Saturday night.
Be known throughout the ages as an instant classic.
We need a bigger gator!
Limb cutting, yes. And blood squirting from...
Flying limbs, I called it in my notes.
What could go wrong?
We look on a regular basis at the movies as they come out, and since there have been over 200 of them, we do go back and look at many of them that are now out on DVD. By this point, I had completely forgotten any semblance of seeing if this actually makes any sense from a plot point of view. So come on by, get involved, and have some fun.
Check us out at SaturdayBMovieReel.com.
Our future depends on it. Make it safe.
This painting, the work of celebrated Austro-Hungarian artist Laszlo Turocsi, hangs today in the museum at Kiev. The features it portrays are those of Countess Dracula. In this period, the Countess held sway over all the provinces of Transylvania. Not only was she beautiful, rich, and powerful, she was also unspeakably cruel. Most notorious of her misdeeds was her custom of taking baths of blood. Today, the bloody Countess lives still and continues to pursue her evil destiny.
All right, welcome back. I appreciate you sticking around.
Oh, God. You are very, very funny, Christopher.
Oh, thanks. Oh. Mama Dracula is a Belgian film directed and produced by Boris, I'm going to struggle with this one, Salzinger?
Sure. Yeah, I think that was right.
It's listed as a horror comedy, but I'm just going to say it's a comedy based on the story, well, not the story, I guess, the legendary Hungarian Countess Bathory?
Yes.
Who was supposedly responsible for as many as 650 deaths of young women. Rumors surfaced after her death that she bathed in the blood of virgins in an attempt to maintain her youth. So, yeah, you know, comedy gold.
Maybe it's that dark humor.
Yeah, absolutely. The title character of Mama Dracula is played by Louise Fletcher.
The remarkably beautiful Louise Fletcher.
Yes, absolutely. She is, that's one of the first things I noted. Every scene that they put her in, she is just, it's not just the camera, okay, set the camera up and then put Lily, no, she is posed in every, she's like a work of art in every frame.
Which is ironic considering they start with a painting of the character.
Ah, true, very much.
And so, I mean, I almost think, you could definitely make the argument that they did that intentionally.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but there is definitely, it is obvious that that great care was taken to put her in the absolutely best light and the best clothes. I mean, a lot of attention was paid to her in this film.
Yes.
For those who may not know, she's probably best known for her Academy Award-winning performance of Nurse Ratched in One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
Which I did not see.
You know, honestly, I have to admit, I've never watched it. I mean, I've certainly seen lots of clips. I've seen her, clips of her. I've seen her and Jack Nicholson perform together, but I've never actually watched the entire film all the way through.
Oh, well, what I remember her from, and I didn't place her until today when I looked her up, of course. But she is in a movie that I've watched over and over since I was a child. And the whole time I was watching Mama Dracula, I kept trying to place her and couldn't figure out who she was. She was in The Chief Detective with Peter Falk. Or Faulkner,
yes.
Sorry. No, Falk. Mm-hmm. Anyway.
Yeah, Peter Falk.
Okay.
Yep.
And she played Madame Duchard. And she, I love her in that movie. She's the Ingrid Bergman character in that movie. She's as gorgeous in that as she is in this. But you are right. They set her up perfectly in every shot in this film. And I love her in it.
Yes. While prolific in both film and television, after this, she never really came close to the kind of success that she got with One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. So it seemed like she kind of, her candle burned brightest early. Mm-hmm. And then she just, she was never out of work, but it was always just a role here, role there. Yeah, Cheap Detective, lots of television appearances, Deep Space Nine in the early 90s.
Yep.
Also starring in this film is Marc Henri and Alexander Weinberg.
I'm going to go with Weinberg. But Weinberg? That, bear in mind, they're Belgians, so it's probably pronounced differently. But yeah, I would run with Weinberg.
Weinberg, I'll go with Weinberg. And they play Vladimir and Ladislas, Mama Dracula's twin vampire sons. Now, Marc Henri went on to direct several award-winning films after this, while Alexander, other than Marc Henri's films, kind of disappeared from everything.
I do think it's worth noting that Marc Henri was a co-writer for this movie, and I didn't realize it the first time I watched it. The second time I watched it, I saw his name, and I thought, that's a familiar name. And and I kind of, after that, I kind of thought, oh, that's how this movie got made.
Because I believe it was also co-written by the director and producer.
So. Yes, so there were people with a lot of passion in this movie, making it happen.
Yeah, yeah.
And acting in it.
There are two other actors that I want to mention. One is Jimmy Schumann, who plays Professor Von Blood.
Professor Von Blood. I love everybody's blood.
Blood. He went on to do mostly voice work for video games after this. He did a few more film roles, but not a whole lot of on-screen performances. The last person I want to mention is one that I think is fairly interesting. Maria Schneider, who plays Nancy, I think her character's name was, in this film, the police detective.
Yes.
She gained a huge amount of notoriety in 1972 for a performance in Last Tango in Paris, starring alongside Marlon Brando. Of course, in that film, she appeared in many graphic sex scenes and did not find the experience a pleasant one, apparently.
With Marlon Brando?
Yeah, well.
Sorry.
She didn't have a really good experience, going so far as saying about one particular scene, quote unquote, "I was crying real tears. I felt humiliated, and to be honest, I felt a little raped, both by Marlon and by director Bernardo Bertolucci."
Well, that's our creepy section of the movie for tonight, so.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeesh.
Her experiences in that film and being looked upon as a sex symbol afterwards kind of motivated her to refuse any future nude scenes, which explains why she's one of the few women appearing in Mama Dracula that does not bear a breast.
It does.
Again, and I should mention that she's another one whose career seemed to burn brightest early on and then I don't want to say faded. I hate to use the term faded, but I don't know how else to describe her. Her and Louise Fletcher, I mean, they both worked in many films and television after this, and or after their big roles. No, I shouldn't say after this. This is not their big role. after their larger big roles.
Yeah.
And then just sort of, they worked. I guess as actors, that's all they really want to do is act. But no, they really never kind of reclaimed the mantle that they held early in their careers. All right, well, let's talk a little bit about Mama Dracula. That is why we are here.
It is?
As Lydia mentioned earlier, the film opens with a painting of the title character and a voiceover that introduces us to the Countess Dracula, as she's described here in this film. And, of course, the story therein of her bathing in the blood of virgins.
I love the voiceover in the intro to this, especially and you see this. I hate to launch into what you're going to see throughout the movie, but I love, I think it sets the scene because you have this voiceover of this incredibly rough and dramatic speaker. And he talks about how she was unspeakably cruel. And he says cruel. I try not to look these things up before I watch them because I want to go into it fresh. And then, and I kind of went, wait, what? Did he say that on purpose? And then it kind of kept going. And by the end of the introduction, I felt like he should be going. Right from the beginning, I kind of thought, oh, this isn't going to be what I expected it to be, is it? And it sure enough, it wasn't.
No, not at all. I think after the introduction, we meet the Professor Peter von Blood, who is a scientist working on artificial blood, for very fortuitous. He gets an invitation to the annual blood conference held by the Countess. Of course, he takes her up on the offer, takes the tickets, and on a boat ride and a credit sequence later.
Oh, I love. There's so much just in the beginning of this movie that it. I have to admit, I stopped taking notes both times I was watching this movie. I get to a certain point and I just forget to write anything down. But no, this entire opening sequence, I don't want to get into details, but one thing I noticed is that the professor, it's almost like a weird science kind of thing, or he reminds me of a mix of Robert Downey Jr. in his early 80s roles. And Jeff Goldblum, you know, a very young Jeff Goldblum. But he's so dramatic and everything he says is over enunciated and over gesticulated. And you would think it were bad acting, except that the subject matter is so it's funny. it's not poorly done. You're not watching, you know, poor direction or poor lighting or poor dialogue even, but you do have this, you know, effusion of acting. First from the professor and then from his assistant, as this is it, when she comes in and she's all, I'm so happy for you. And of course we don't know why she's so happy, but she like goes over and like starts to cuddle him. And you know, of course by now you're going, okay, this is definitely not a serious movie. And then I don't want to share the credits, but the lead up to and the credits were immediately, I think, my favorite credits I've ever seen.
Yeah, it was definitely one of my favorites.
I think I don't want to tell anybody, so I think just even if all you do is just watch up through the credits, then you'll see a very worthwhile, you won't have wasted those 5 minutes in your life, I think. It's just entertaining and enjoyable.
Absolutely. Well, we get a train ride that, and this is rather cute. I like the fact that the train ride, the entire train stops at a particular location and drops the professor off. And it reminds me of all the old vampire films where the carriage will only go so far. It will not take you any further.
And then, I don't know if you noticed, I didn't notice this until the second time I watched it, but after they drop him off, the train backs up. Backs away.
See?
So,
there you go.
It's totally, you know, they will not go in this area. It totally made me laugh.
Yeah. Well, of course, I think there is a, they're going to stop short. It's going to drop Professor.
He comes to an inn. Apparently, Chase there.
Oh, there you go. Yes. Sorry. I had more written in my notes that I didn't say.
Oh, no.
So I got lost.
But as he goes into the inn, he's greeted by a man.
Who throws him into the arms of his daughter.
and is doing everything he can to get them to go in back and make kissy-kissy, as she says.
Kiss-kiss-bang-bang, I think is what she calls
kiss,
it.
Kiss,
I want to make kiss-kiss-bang-bang.
Oh, she says bang-bang. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, there you go. Yes, another Robert Downey Jr. reference.
Yeah.
Courtesy of yours truly. But yeah, and as it goes through, and eventually the professor goes away with the delightful Rosa, which Rosa, by the way, is the Dracula's carriage driver.
Yes.
But the father, you know, berates the girl and says, if you keep acting like this, you'll never lose your virginity.
And you'll end up in the castle. Like, I tried, Papa. we'll come back to her, I think, at the end and just kind of general discussion, I think.
Okay.
Let's see. Well, once we get to the castle, we are introduced to the Countess Dracula and her twin sons, Vladimir and Ladislaus.
Again, great intro of characters. It's very overdone, but it suits this movie. This, by the way, this is not a Bram Stoker. This is not a, you know, a Tarantino. This is the closest thing I can think of, besides Rocky Horror, for obvious reasons. If you see the costuming and all that comes out of this, the closest thing I can think of is Monty Python, because it's intentionally over the top and a little ridiculous. And I feel like it's one of those that we'll come back to and reference probably in future episodes.
Could possibly.
Professor, I know how deeply you have delved into the sweet mystery of life, probing the puzzle of its very essence, blood. Searching for the secret of eternal youth. Ah, how well I understand you. Ah, how close I feel to you.
Me too.
For centuries I have known the magical powers of blood. Powers greater even than those of holy water. That fountain of youth that withstands the ravages of time itself. Look at its face. I can no longer do without you. I am lost without you. And you, Professor, are lost without me.
But, Callus, surely... surely science should serve all mankind rather than catering to the selfish needs of a few individuals.
What is your price?
Not a penny less than... 10,000 dollars?
Let us make it a million.
Make it a million. I want to point out, too, you see it a little bit later in the film, even more pronouncedly, but her accent in this is just perfect. They're, you know, they are doing the whole Transylvanian is what they would say, Transylvanian accent, and she does the entire thing perfectly, you know, the whole time.
There is not a V to be heard anywhere in this film.
There are virgins and there are vampires. but they go through the dialogue and just absolutely flawlessly every time. The accents are just, and I don't think Louise Fletcher is Bavarian at all. As far as I know, she's an American actress, but it is just fantastic. Best accent I've seen, I think, probably in any film.
Yeah, absolutely. It is a little over the top. It's like, it's just over the top. Like, there's probably not really anybody that really speaks with that strong or that.
But you don't question.
Kind of an accent, but it comes across as being natural.
It does, and you don't question it. You don't even, I think you don't even consider that it could be put on until she says a couple of phrases and you think, you'll get over it. You know, stuff like that. You go, oh, wait a minute. This English is not her second language. I love it too. Every time they say, let's go to the castle.
What do you think of the brothers? They have, about this point, they have an interesting scene between the two of them.
I know the one you mean. Them, I am the bat.
Yes, in the clock. I am the big hand.
I'm waiting for my friends. I am the small hand.
It is me. It is me.
I am the bat.
They are bizarre.
You can tell by listening to us, it is kind of mind-blowing. You don't even know what to do except to quote it. this is why I feel like it's kind of reminiscent of Monty Python. It's like you only get it if you've seen it.
Right. Oh, yeah. And well, that's what I was expecting. When I saw that, you know, in the credits, it's introducing Marc-Henri and Alexander Weinberg. And I thought, oh, okay. And after watching them, I'm thinking, well, these must be like some real popular comedy duo or something that everyone in Belgium knows. And this is their first film or something like that. No. Apparently, I don't know.
I went to school with a couple of guys, twins, and I don't know that these guys are twins. I suppose I could look it up and find out. But seeing the way that they interact, and there are so many scenes with them in it where it's just this weird little vignettes of these two, you know, vampire brothers interacting. But they're engaging. And I think that it's because they have that kind of, you know, that intimate relationship with each other where they can play off each other just without – they just know what's going to come out of the other one's mouth, you know?
Oh, exactly. You definitely tell they grew up together.
Absolutely.
This isn't just two actors that get through together on a set. These boys, they grew up together. They know how each other reacts. They know if they say this, he's going to say that, or he's going to do that. Yeah.
And I think that why it's so entertaining to watch is because even though you kind of, I mean, you never think about the exclusion factor in that. It's just so engaging because you just are watching this relationship. I'm probably going a little over the top on this, but
probably not. No, I have a feeling, especially in this little vignette that early on, this was just a matter of, I can't imagine that a lot of that was in a script.
I think they just made it up. I totally agree with you. And I don't know offhand that that's the case. Some of it, you know, maybe the lines where, you know, they're saying I'm the big hand, I'm the small hand, you know, that kind of thing. But then once they start running around and acting like that, that had to have been improv because it's too beautiful. It doesn't feel rehearsed. It just feels like it. Frankly, it feels like me and my friends when we're just goofing off.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what it feels like.
Well, we find out that the Countess and her boys run a woman's clothing shop, a fashion boutique, I guess you could say.
Called Wump.
Called, yeah, Wump.
As in Wumpire.
And there we see the very scientific way that they collect the virgins for the Countess. How did you like that? I don't want to spoil exactly how, but what it really boils down to is, are you a virgin?
It really is. That cracked me up. And of course the answers that they get consistently.
Yes.
But then also, you know, I like that they did pull a little bit of interest into it with the smoke and mirrors, I'll say. You know, the whole, and I love it later on, they get, you know, drilled about what's true and what's not true about the vampire lore. And so right. He says, oh, you can't be seen in mirrors? Not a chance. but yeah, obviously we, you know, it alludes to that in this particular scene. And I don't really have words. I really just don't. But it made me laugh, though. I thought this is, you know, the era of movie that this is, you have to have some topless women. It's required, apparently.
Yep. I was going to mention, for anyone that may, for whatever reason, decide to watch this with a family, there is some nudity.
There's quite a bit of breastage in this. So this is a 1980s movie. You're going to see some topless women. And I thought it was a little bit humorous that on almost every time they go to snag a virgin, then she ends up, you know, topless before they manage to do it. So, that's the guys. Guys.
Us men.
But, you know, yeah. I don't know. What do you want me to say? I'm not offended. I probably am supposed to be offended, but I'm not.
Nope. All right. Well, moving on.
Are you offended?
Not at all. The professor has a snoop around the castle while everyone is at work, I guess, and he discovers the Countess's literal bloodbath and shower.
Yeah.
Actually managing to slipping off a very poorly balanced chair and knocking himself out in the process.
He had on his shoes. No wonder he fell. He fell like 3-inch lifts on the back of his shoes. But one thing that I did notice in this scene, and I noticed it more the second time I watched it. Also, I just want to throw out real quickly. I watched it twice. I watched it once on Dailymotion, which is completely peppered with ads. And then the second time I watched it, and I had seen somewhere that it mentioned that it was a little bit better image quality on Amazon. I found the opposite to be true. So,
oh, really?
Yeah. Dailymotion is extremely annoying because you get interrupted constantly, but I did the picture was definitely a better quality for me on that one.
Interesting.
But the one thing that I noticed in this particular scene was it kind of is this weird back and forth cutting between the family driving back to the castle and him sneaking around. I think they cut back to them driving and then they show a shot of just Rosa driving the car. And there's nothing tying it to the scene whatsoever. They could have achieved the same thing with just one shot. So there's for, you know, you hardcore direction buffs out there, you're going to have some annoyance with this film because you're going to notice them a little bit of poor voicing over, a little bit of weird cutting.
It was weird. It's something that I think kind of it's something I want to discuss at the end. It's just because it kind of it's an overall comment about the film. What they're doing with their cutting back and forth, it's almost like they're trying to build up a little bit of suspense.
It is.
Like, oh, is he going to get caught? Right. But then they just have him falling and knocking out and getting found anyway. So it's like, so what's the point of building up the suspense?
Well, and they're in the very beginning, you know, speaking of building up the suspense, I think they did it perfectly right before the credits. I don't want to get into it because the suspense that they build there cracked me up. I'm just totally amused by it. But I think they do that throughout the film, but in some areas more effectively than in others.
Well, over dinner, after he's recovered, we do learn more about the Countess and her two sons. She admits to the bathing in the blood of virgins. Or, I'm sorry, virgins.
Virgins. With the
bats. And
bats.
That is bats of blood.
Yeah.
The pure blood of young virgins.
Virgins?
Yes, virgins. That is what I said, virgins.
Yeah.
This alone can guarantee eternal beauty like mine. And there we have our problem, Professor.
I can see that you would.
Where, in this decadent, modern world of ours, where can one find virgins? I am experiencing a terrible shortage of virgin blood. Even though Vladimir and Ladislaus do their very best to help.
You mean... I mean... They're...
Vampires. Of course.
Yeah, but the real thing?
It's a real thing.
That's great. But how?
Who knows? That is the way they were born. I still bear the scars.
So.
This is one of those moments where she carries off the dialogue flawlessly through, I think, a fairly long cut in the, you know, and she said, she's talking about how some metallurgists, some, you know, oh, I forget what she calls them, but they've entrusted secrets to her. And she says, where their dusty volumes could only speculate, I am living proof. I love the where their dusty volumes. And I'm like, oh, it's so perfectly done. But this is, I think, the scene where she has the most exposition, and she definitely carries off 100% of it.
She also admits that the boys are indeed vampires.
Yeah. Oh, and this is the
and
part.
And who knows why? They were just born that way. I have the scars to prove it.
And she says, come off it. Is that garbage? So I love the guys going, this is where he gets to drill them a little bit. You're real vampires? Oh, well, that's...
Yeah, so what about this? And he holds up a fork and knife with a cross, and he's like, oh, come on, I am so hungry.
Yeah. there are a lot of little moments in this, but I feel...
Apparently all of the vampire myth is false, except they drink blood and you can't see them in mirrors.
And they move very quickly, I guess.
What's that?
And they move very quickly.
Oh, yes, and they can move very quickly.
I'm sorry, what was that? but this, so they take him downstairs. No, there's a part before that where they take him downstairs.
So, yeah, well, they introduce him to his lab, and the professor has a big fit. He loves his lab. He's got these giant, it's a brewery.
It is, it's a giant brewery. But tell me this, yes. When you're watching that scene, did you not feel like you were hearing an exact cut of part of the soundtrack from The Burbs?
I wouldn't know. I don't know.
Oh, gosh, guys. Anybody that's listening, please pipe up, tell us on Facebook, because I am convinced that either they – well, The Burbs came after this, so that I'm convinced that they stole part of the music for The Burbs, especially the parts where they're spying on the neighbors. It's like almost – note for note the same as the scene where he's first getting to see his lab. So come back to me on that one, guys. Let me know on Facebook. We'll move on right now.
Okay. But the professor does try to get on with his work, but the brothers are being a little bit of a nuisance to him, and things get a little a little wacky in the lab.
I think you mean wacky.
Wacky. with the professor and a leech and equipment and the brothers, and it's a bizarre about, you know, good 10-15, feels like about 10-15 minutes of the film. I think about this time we meet an attractive female police officer who's investigating the missing girls. This is Nancy Maria Schneider.
At this point, I failed. I just stop taking notes every time.
I'll tell you what. I have what's left of my notes is that the Countess takes on a special interest in her, as do the boys, and that the Countess takes Nancy captive for reasons that don't become completely clear until the end.
Well, now, let's back up just a little bit. When all this wackiness is going on, they come out with this, you know, revelation that the professor can't achieve their goals unless he has 10 gallons of human blood.
And they, right, and that's 10 gallons. That's 10 virgins.
10 virgins.
And virgins. Say, virgins.
We'll give you the, you know, so we'll give you the 10 gallons, and the next thing you see, it's nighttime, and you hear, meh. And the Countess goes down and goes into, I don't know, her outhouses of the outbuilding, and the brothers are there about to kill a sheep.
Yes.
What is the meaning of this tomfoolery? You really are a couple of neatbeats. I accept no substitutes. I want real, live, virgin blood, and nothing but.
And so they return to the store and begin the
calling.
Pulling, I think that's a great word for it. We have an interesting little scene here with a cross and a star of David.
Star of David. It's an interesting scene. A fiance looking for his girlfriend.
Right. Let's start over again. Okay.
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 My fiance came in here. Okay.
Okay. Red hair. Okay. Again, this is one of those where it's so funny when you're talking about it with somebody else that knows about it. It's right up there with, you know, a herring, you know. See, I say a herring and everybody goes, oh, yeah, the herring. But you know, if you haven't seen it, you're like, I don't get it. Why is that funny? Same kind of thing, guys. So this is kind of one of those where you laugh a lot more, I think, if you've seen the movie before you listen to the podcast.
Yeah, that'd be my recommendation overall would be don't watch this alone.
You know, that actually, yeah, I think I would run with that. I enjoyed it alone, but I enjoyed.
So did I, but I knew I'd get a chance to talk to you about it, about someone else that's seen it.
Very true. So this is a really, I would definitely put on the cult classics shelf. I would pull this out when I have a bunch of friends over and we're all drinking.
Yes.
Over the age of 21, of course.
Of course.
And, you know, with the
cavat that this is a ridiculous movie. Do not even try to take this seriously. No. I'm not trying to show you, you know, the next Casablanca.
This is the last Casablanca. No. But I think we picked the perfect time of year. Christopher, you picked the perfect time of year to watch this movie because it is a really good, lighthearted Dracula movie. You can watch it and, you know, maybe not with the kids around, but it's definitely not gonna, you know, horrify anybody or make anybody vomit on the carpet.
Yeah, exactly. But like I said, my notes kind of stopped at this point too.
Keep taking notes, can't you?
Yeah. It just seemed like a good spot to stop because after that, it's just, this is where a lot of stuff starts happening, and there is some funny bits. There is some scratch your head moments.
There are a lot of scratch your head moments in this movie.
Yeah,
go
ahead.
No, I was going to say one part that puzzled me is a bit where he's chasing her, and then all of a sudden it switches, and she's chasing him, and I'm going. It's kind of one of those classic Pink Panther moments, but you're also kind of going, wait, I don't understand what happened to make the switch. Why? I'm okay with it switching, but why did it switch? I'm so confused. But you just accept it.
There are a couple scenes that take place in the film that I don't think are going to be big spoilers or anything, but I do want to talk about because just like I was saying with the, you know, they go to try to build up the suspense that isn't needed.
Right.
There's a scene with the two brothers. Of course, we've established that they can't see each other in mirrors. Or they can't see themselves in mirrors, I should say. So there's a scene where they get up in the morning and they're...
I knew you were going to talk about this before you even started.
They have a bedroom that is essentially mirrored.
It's a mirror image. One side is a mirror image of the other.
Exactly. So they get up, and as they get up, they perform. It reminds me. Think of like I Love Lucy sketch with Harpo Marx, or I can't think where the gag where the mirror is not there, but there's someone on the other side of the door exactly like
the Patty Duke show. All right, you Nick at Night people.
But they go through their whole morning ritual, essentially mirroring each other as they go through. And then towards the very end, the professor shows up, and he looks at what he thinks is a mirror and doesn't see himself and panics. Now, my only problem with this is at no point during this scene, I mean, they're not good enough to make you think that it's really a mirror.
Well,
it's like they're trying to go for this gag, but the gag doesn't work.
Well, now here's why it doesn't work. I have a theory on this. They don't maintain that fourth wall. They break it. They move the camera around. And so you get to see, it's not all just one shot of them moving. The camera rolls with them. So you can see that the angles on the items change and move. So you're not, typically when you get that mirror shot, you have a static shot. And it's much more difficult to for your brain to go, wait a minute, this is separate. But in this instance, your brain is told that it's separate because the camera angles change, and you can tell that there's nowhere in the room there's a clear dividing line. Usually, when they do that, they have like a half wall or something like that, so you can see that dividing line.
It's honestly hard to even try to describe it. It's one of these things that in my head I had it all worked out, but as I'm trying to speak, I'm like, this doesn't work.
Well, and here's my
when you watch it, you'll understand. It's just we already know that there's twins,
right?
They don't mimic each other enough to make you think it's anything but just the two of them being
just
weird,
goofing around. Well, and I mentioned this when I was watching it with Jack. I said, honestly, a large portion of this movie is this just these two guys jerking the professor around.
Yeah.
Like, that's just kind of what it is. So, and I feel like this scene would have worked better before he had the chance to ask them all of those questions, because it comes in afterwards. And he already should know that, I guess they're trying to say, oh, he thinks that he's turned into a vampire, but he should already know.
Yeah, exactly. So why would he think that they're there in a mirror?
Exactly. If
they can't see themselves. Yeah, it just doesn't work.
It doesn't make sense.
Yeah. And the other scene is actually towards the end where we see we go back to the inn with the the young woman who has been trying to get rid of her virginity, who finally apparently loses it to the police chief of the town.
Yeah.
And it's Mr. Wright, and it's finally, and then he goes off, and then she motions to the crowd and kind of gives them a, come on, boys, and heads to the bedroom with a crowd of men after him. Like, wait a minute, I thought she was. What the hell was that?
Maybe she just like kept thinking it was going to be, I don't know, great, and then it was what it was, and she was like, oh, that was fun. Let's do it again, everybody.
The whole gag with her was. She can't lose her virginity. So, but I don't know.
I would speculate maybe all the other villagers didn't want her dad to kill them. Like, I don't know. I don't know.
Again, it's just I understand the gag that they're going for, but it doesn't work.
Yeah. Well, and then I'm so puzzled why the whole building blew up.
Sabotage,
of course. But and then you kind of get this Rocky Horror ending where all of a sudden it's like everything just is boom, wrapped up in this neat little bundle, and you're like, oh
yeah, exactly,
I wasn't expecting that. Okay. So it's not, I don't want to get too much into it. It's definitely worth a watch, and I feel like I was satisfied with the ending, but it kind of was it was almost like the plot was an afterthought.
Yeah, exactly. Now, I will admit, the first time I watched this, I kind of sat there and about a good 20 minutes in, I thought, oh, God, what have I done?
I didn't have that thought. I thought, what has Christopher done?
So I watched it the first time. And then the second time I watched it, knowing what to expect, I actually found myself enjoying it a little bit more. Maybe I didn't know what this film was. I didn't know how corny, how goofy this film was going to be, especially when it's, you know, the horror comedy. I expected, well, there's nothing in the horror other than the fact that there are vampires.
Yeah.
Because there's really no real blood, not really. There's no scares. It is a comedy.
It is
a screwball comedy.
It is. Definitely. There are definitely moments in this, like when they're jogging, when the professor and Rosa are jogging. And you're just going, I don't really understand what I'm watching.
Yeah. Like, why are they even doing this?
They're jogging, but what? Why? We didn't
Why?
Jogging. Oh, man. Yeah, it is definitely a screwball comedy. This is not a movie to watch when you want to have a, you know, deep insight into, you know, the state of humanity. But if you just watched Sullivan's Travels and you are looking for something funny, this should be fifth or sixth on your list. Maybe.
Well, do you have a rating that you would give this one?
Oh, gosh. What are we, out of five?
Yep. What, between 1 to 5 Othels, Lydia, where would this one fall for you?
I would give it a very strong 2.
Okay.
But not in a negative way. I would give it a strong 2 in a positive way, because this is a movie that was made in a time where screwball comedies were very, very prolific. You know, it was the very early 80s, and it was directed by some Belgian dudes. It was kind of, I think, intended to highlight the comedy and the interaction of these twins that nobody had ever heard of. And I think that, you know, they, kudos to them for casting Louise Fletcher. She's brilliant. I feel like it was a very good attempt for a first or second movie. I feel like they actually managed to provide something entertaining where a lot of people fail to do that on their first film. So the fact that I'm giving it a 2 is more of a compliment than an insult. and I know that's hard to believe, but I mean, you know, you can have a movie and know that in your head that it's a 2, but still enjoy watching it. And I think this is that kind of movie. It's a 2 from a critical standpoint, you know, but gotcha. there is enough in it that I think is good enough to catch your attention, to keep your attention. I could watch Louise Fletcher all day. I just don't think I could get bored of watching her. She seriously spends 3 or 4 scenes just looking in a mirror, and I can't take my eyes off her. You know, she's just fantastically beautiful. She's just so interesting to me, you know, and then the twins, again, there's this weird quirkiness, but you have to love their interactions with each other. You know, these are two people that just get each other, you know, and even though they're bizarre and you really don't want to be alone with them in a room, you're just like, well, they're funny, you know, they're funny and quirky and they're not.
I think
trying.
I'm definitely going to take I'm going to take the grandfather clock scene. I think I'm going to cut that out and post it to the Facebook page.
You know, if you really, and it's funny because I don't even feel like that embodies the movie quite as much, but it definitely embodies the weirdest part of the movie.
Yes.
If you want to watch something really weird, watch the grandfather clock scene and you can't miss it. You know what it is when you see it. But, you know, when the first time that I'm watching this, I'm like, oh my gosh, they've got a person stuck in the grandfather clock. Oh, it's creepy. And then, you know, the second time you see it, you're like, oh my gosh, it's this scene again. That's the first time you watch it, there are a lot more surprises and a lot more suspense. And the second time you watch it, it's a Monty Python moment.
Well, you know, I'll admit that when I sat down after watching the film, making my notes, and when I sat down here, I thought for sure I was just going to give this a one. I really was. After talking over it with you and just realizing how much fun it is to kind of share it.
Yeah.
I think I'm with you and I'll go with a two. It is definitely not a film that I would recommend. Oh, yeah, run out and see this.
Not for me.
But if you have got someone of, you know, of like mind that you can sit down and watch this and just laugh at and just each scratch your head at the scratch your head moments, giggle at the silly moments, you know, and then discuss why that joke doesn't work afterwards. I mean, there are some cute sight gags. There are, you know, especially, you know, vampire based gags.
Oh my goodness, yes. What is it? She says something about the blood of virgins, and he goes, "A virgin." And she goes, "Yes, virgins."
Virgins. That's what I said.
See, and you can't say that without laughing about it.
No. So under those circumstances, I would recommend watching the film, but under no other circumstance, I guess.
Yeah,
or maybe after listening to this, you've heard us discuss it, so, you know, kind of in your own way, join in the discussion and watch it. But that's how I would recommend it.
You know, and another movie actually came to mind that it reminds me a little bit of the spirit of this film is Army of Darkness. You know, it's comedy horror. There's nothing in it that's scary, but, you know, it's goofy and you just keep watching it, you know, and it's you love it, but nobody can say it's great filmmaking technique. Nobody can say it's great acting because it's not, but it's so much fun to watch.
Okay. Yeah. I'm with you. Like I said, after discussing it, I'm with you. If we hadn't talked about this, if I had just sat and watched this film, why did I even start this?
And like Monty Python, I think it's actually funnier to talk about than it is to watch. But once you've seen it, then you're in on the jokes, and it's worth talking about.
Okay, so by yourself, it's probably a 0 to a 1 with Orphan Entertainment.
Kitschy humor horror, and then you're gonna love it.
With Orphan Entertainment, it's a 2. I think that's going to do it, yeah?
Yeah, I think we've said what needs to be said and left out what needs to be left out, and our listeners can watch the film and give us their
judge for themselves.
Yeah.
Well, I want to thank everyone for listening, and I hope you continue to download episodes of Orphan Entertainment. You, of course, can do that through our homepage at orphan-entertainment.janja.net by looking us up on Stitcher Radio, which is something I really haven't mentioned and probably should have. I imagine there are plenty of Stitcher Radio listeners out there. Or you can do it by subscribing through iTunes, where you can give us a rating and leave a comment, just like iTunes subscriber DMSBR549, who left us a 5-star review. Oh, and Lydia, did you read it? Would you like to hear what this user wrote?
It.
I've listened to several episodes of the show, and it has bumped its way to the top of my favorites list. The best part is the variety of things they cover. Movies, radio dramas, short subjects, educational films, and possibly books. We'll see about that. The hosts are fun to listen to and really seem to enjoy what they are doing, even if what they are discussing is really bad.
Well, thank you. We agree. We definitely enjoy it, even if it's really bad.
Yeah, they go on and say, I also like that they don't put down the film or filmmakers or make snarky, mean-spirited comments, even if they probably deserve them. Well, thank you. That is, you know, we do try. I try not to just bash a film.
There aren't many films out there that are worth just bashing.
Continuing, even if you have no intention of watching or listening to what is being discussed, it's worth the listen for the back and forth between Christopher and Lydia and the occasional guest. Sorry, Barry. He has been gone a while,
I guess.
So.
Yeah.
Now, when I review something, I usually like to have at least one comment on something to improve on or work on. However, I really can't think of anything. The closest I can come up with is that they need to do more shows than once a month. I'm afraid in 50 years they'll still have a long way to go before they finish.
Yeah, that's very true.
Well, thank you very much. I couldn't have asked for a better review. That is just, that's pretty awesome.
That's a great review.
It is.
Also, I think it's worth mentioning that in 50 years, we will be on our 600th episode. So when we've gotten around to 600 episodes, then, oh, man.
That will indeed be a milestone.
Maybe my remodel in my house will finally be finished. Yeah, then we can do it more than once a month. thank you so much. That was a great review. Honestly, I'm not being cheesy or anything. I'm really touched. I'm so happy to know that anybody else actually doesn't hate hearing me talk or hearing us talk. That's fantastic. I'm so happy to hear that.
Well, I will admit, Lydia, that one of the joys of doing this podcast is it does give me an excuse to sit down and talk with you once a month.
Likewise. I appreciate that you provide a lot of the framework for the discussion so I can just yak my mouth off. So.
Yeah, and I appreciate that all I have to do is provide the framework. So you can.
Well, I definitely enjoy, hearing your insights. I don't feel like I can talk to people about movies that often. So, now we're going to start just like, oh, Christopher. Oh, Lydia. Oh, Christopher. Oh, Lydia.
Well, then I'm going to close this out before it starts getting too crazy. If you would like to agree or disagree with our fantastic review or contact with any suggestions, comments, or general feedback, you can do that by joining our Facebook page at facebook.com/group/orphanentertainment. And with that, I will say, Lydia, thank you very much. Thank you very much for joining me and for joining me for, let's see, we've done 24 episodes, 21 films, and I think you've only missed one film. So thank you for joining me for 20 films and or radio shows.
You know what? I would say someday I'll catch up to you, but I probably won't. You'll probably done every one of them.
There's a maybe a good chance since I seem to be one that does the recording.
You do. So. But thank you, Christopher. It was fun talking about this movie. I'm looking forward to next month.
Absolutely. We've actually... I don't know. We've never done it. We've never actually had an idea of what we're going to do when we're actually recording. But we've actually kind of discussed ahead of time about something to do next month.
It's like you did it on purpose or something.
Yeah, as if.
Yeah.
We've actually discussed, and it's something I'm pretty excited about talking about because I've actually watched it once myself.
Usually I'm the one that's seen it, and you haven't yet.
I know. I watched this maybe a year or two ago. We're going to take a look at the third and final BBC serial of Quatermass and the Pit. Now, this is I think it was 1959 when this was aired. 58 and 59, I think. Somewhere right along those. So it predates a lot of science fiction that many of the themes that go on in this serial, play off of much later. It'll be fun to talk about is what I'm trying to say. I'm really looking forward to it.
Me too.
All right, well, that is going to do it. Thank you very much for listening. Thank you for the wonderful review. And for all you people who haven't reviewed but are thinking wonderful thoughts, put those into a review.
Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. Here, let me put the mouse in your hand.
If you'd like me to write your review for you, just email.
Email Christopher at.
All right. Thanks, everyone. Thank you, Lydia.
Thanks.
Bye, all.
What are you doing in there?
I am on someone's trail.
Who might that be?
The Little Hand.
That's me. That's me. I am the bad. I am the bad.